This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. And boy, oh boy, do we have a story behind the next book that... this is quite a story, and I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Anna David. Hi, Anna.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, you know, this... You must know this Yiddish expression, beschert. It is beschert. It was meant to be that I would read about your book, and then, because it happened just a few days after another author told me she had been trying for so long to get back her rights to her books. She wrote a bunch of children's books when she was younger, and now she's, you know, writing mysteries and doing very well, but she still has a love for those books, and she wants them back, and she has not been able to get them. And then I read about your story, and this is a true story, and it's so exciting. So it was just beschert that I read about you and that I had an opening today. And of course, the most important thing that was meant to be is that you are here alive and you can talk about your, you know, this is a traumatic, in many ways, the story about your book, Party Girl, is very traumatic. And I'm really, I know my listeners will be intrigued to hear your story.
Well, first of all, I'm the worst Jew, so I didn't know that expression, but I'm going to believe you that it's true.
Well, it is. It's a good expression because in your life, you know, sometimes, well, things didn't go exactly as planned. Here you write a book that's so well received in the year 2007, right? 2007? 14 years ago? And it didn't happen. But in a way, you know, beschert, it was meant to be. It led you to other things and other exciting adventures and saving your life. And here you are today, and you have something really great to talk about.
Yes. I mean, basically what happened is I had the same dream that many writers have, which is a big five traditional publisher is going to snap up my rights, pay me all this money, and I'm going to become famous. Everyone's going to buy my book. And part one was true. I did sell the rights to my top choice publisher, but then she was fired. The division just fell apart, and it was released under this fake imprint listed as science fiction. This is a funny novel listed as science fiction. And nobody, in traditional publishing, nobody tells you anything. All you know is that you clearly weren't successful because nobody's calling you back. And then I slowly learned, oh, this book didn't live up to expectations. And I was able to get five more book deals with HarperCollins, but you're always kind of digging yourself out of the hole of your first book if it didn't sell well.
And
you hear an echo when I talk?
Oh, what? We can hear you.
Echo when I talk? Okay, there's just a crazy echo when I talk.
I don't hear an echo. It sounds perfect here.
Great.
Okay. Well, so tell us about Party Girl. So it was 2007. You wrote the book. You get a book deal, and it's a very exciting time. Tell us, you know, it's the book is fascinating, and I'm not always sure as I'm reading it how much is... You explain the book because it's a complex book and your life is complex. So explain, how do you explain this book?
Well, first of all, it's not for anyone who shocks easily. Let's just get out with that. And it's based on the fact when I went to rehab in the year 2000 and I got sober. I'd really struggled with drugs and alcohol. I got sober and I immediately got hired at this magazine called Premiere to write a column called Party Girl. And so I thought it was so ironic that here I'd been this party girl my whole life, and suddenly I'm not, and I'm writing a column called Party Girl about my glamorous life, which was anything but glamorous at the time. All I was doing was going to 12-step meetings and hanging out with my cats and going to coffee with my new sober friends. And so then I decided that would be a really funny premise for a book. If a girl gets sober and has to create a fake persona based on who she used to be because it's her job. So that's the premise of the book. It's a novel very much based on my own experiences about this girl who has to fake being wild when she's not wild. And so I wrote the book in 2004. It takes a long time with traditional publishing. So then it came out in 2007. And there was a big bidding war over the movie rights, and there was a lot of publicity, but it didn't sell well. And so it always broke my heart because it was really kind of before time. About a couple years ago, something called this idea of Quitlet emerged, and there were all these books about getting sober, and they all became sensations, and it always kind of broke my heart that I felt like my book was the first of those, and nobody ever knew about it because it didn't sell that well. So I was able to get the rights back. It was not easy. Even though my contract stipulated that if the book was out of print, my rights were back, my lawyer said, to be safe, you've really got to get permission from them. And he wrote them, and they... over and over, and they never responded. My agent wrote them over and over, and they never responded. And I always say, it's not that they mattered to them so much. It mattered to them so little, they couldn't really be bothered. And then finally, I just said, you know what? I'm going to re-release this book. I have a publishing company, and I know exactly how to do it. And they're not even going to probably know. And literally right then, I got a letter saying I got my rights back.
Well, you're lucky you did, because if you didn't have that letter and then this book comes out and it's a great success and you get a movie deal, then you would have had problems.
True. I mean, traditional publishing is just so broken. You know this, right?
Oh, I know. I know. I've been doing this program 6.5 years, and I've talked to over 500 authors. So I have heard some hair-raising stories, but I am glad that you officially got the rights back, because I tell you, I've spoken to so many authors, and one of them is Clive Cussler, who, you know, passed away recently. Recently, you know, the months go by. But he told me his terrible stories about being sued. I mean, he was sued by, you know, the major studios sometimes because of things like this. And he went through so many lawsuits. It was like, I paid for this lawyer's, you know, house. And so, yeah, if they knew that you were going to get a movie deal, it wouldn't have been so easy or so pretty.
True. Good point.
Yeah.
It's very easy as a traditionally published author to get really resentful from the publishers, but they just don't know. They're not keeping up with the time is the problem. They're not trying to be awful. They just haven't really caught up to what's going on.
I know. And, you know, I worked in Hollywood and I wrote scripts. And one of my jobs was to take books and write the script of the book. And, mm-hmm. I mean, we were so cautious. And I was, just from my own personal point of view, I didn't even care if what the studio had. I was so cautious because if I spent my time writing a script and the author comes along and says, you don't have a right, it would have been a mess. So, this whole, you know, the rights thing is important. And, of course, in Hollywood, the rights are really important when something becomes valuable. That's boy, oh boy. Well, I mean, look at what happened to Johansson lately. You know, I mean, she's so famous. She's so important. And, whoa, they come, you know, these things happen. And so now you're clear and you have all the rights to this book and all the rights to the movie deal, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's Hollywood. If you worked in it, you know that nothing's a sure thing.
Oh, yeah, I know.
The movie's been the movie rights have been optioned over and over and over again. And this time it's looking good, but we still don't know.
I know. I had one of my scripts optioned three times, and it's still in turnaround. And I am still waiting for A Gentleman in Moscow. Now, that he got the movie deal, I think, as soon as the book hit the shelves. He got a movie deal. A Gentleman in Moscow is a fantastic book. It'll make a fantastic movie. But where is it today? You know?
I know.
These happen, and it's so frustrating for a writer. And that's why you have to be strong. You have to have nerves of steel to continue and not exactly, like you said, not get bitter.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I kind of knew, because I'd lived in Hollywood for a while, when there was a bidding war over the film rights, I went with who's paying me the most for the option, because I know the chances of it getting made are very slim. I see so many people that are like, my rights got optioned. And then they're, you know, picking out their premiere dress, and it's like, no. There's a million more steps before you get there.
Oh, yeah. And I think Clive told me that one of his books was optioned like 27 times, and he made more money from the options than he ever did from selling the book. So, you know, sometimes that can work out. And I made money from the options. I mean, I was happy at the time. But of course, it would have been nice. It's still in turnaround, the last I heard. Somebody's turning around with it. And sometimes it is not the highest that somebody will, you know, pay you. It's the one who has a passion for the project. If you have someone who has a passion for the project, that can move mountains.
Yeah, that's true.
So we'll hope.
Yeah, and they don't pay really for options anymore.
Yeah, it's not like the old days. In my day, they had to pay me every time they wanted it. They had to pay me.
Oh, not anymore.
I know. They don't do that same thing. They learn. I think after maybe paying Clive Cussler 27 times for an option, he was very tough.
Yeah.
They learned. You know, I think it'll happen partly because, well, the subject is, you know, it's it's sort of out there. It's, you know, sex, you know, cells and rock and roll and all of this, you know, addiction stories, as you say, quit lit. It's selling very well. And there's a lot of streaming video. Gosh knows, they have to start making new stuff because I cannot stand any of these things anymore. I've seen anything that I wanted to see, I've seen at least twice, you know, and that's it. They've better start making new stuff.
Mm-hmm. I know. I'm ready for it, too.
Yeah. Are they going to let you write the script?
I did write the script.
You did write the script.
Yeah, over the pandemic. I used to try to be a screenwriter, and I had an agent, but I didn't really get very far. And my boyfriend's a screenwriter, and he just sort of came up with the structure and gave it to me as a pandemic project. He said, you're going to write the script. And I was, over the pandemic, back when we were in real lockdown, I wrote the script, and then I became friends with Jeff Garlin, who's a comedian, who's on Curb Your Enthusiasm. And he and I worked on the script together.
He's
attached as a producer and as a part in it. And now we're back in development with an Oscar-winning producer and looking for a director.
Okay. Well, you've moved up, you know, through the steps. And the most important, as I said, is to have somebody passionate about your work and somebody who wants to see it on screen and wants to get it done. You know, as I said, the word beshert is very important. Actually, it's a very important Yiddish word, and you know, whether you're Jewish or not, the idea that things are meant to be, and sometimes you don't know why, but you are here. You survived your addiction, and do you want to tell a little bit about that? Before we talk, I want to talk very much about your publishing world, but just a few minutes about your message to people who have addiction problems.
Well, let me just say that nobody wants to get sober. I think a lot of people who are struggling with addiction think, oh, these sober people, especially now, are so out and proud and talking, writing books, talking on radio interviews about it. We all felt the way that you did, which was, I can't. And I think it's just open your mind to the possibility that your mind will change and life is a lot different than you expect it to be. I thought getting sober would be the end of my life. It turned out it was the beginning. I owe my life to 12-step. That's not for everybody, but I highly recommend going to a meeting, finding a meeting and checking it out and getting to know people who are living this way. And you'd be amazed what can happen in your life.
And amazing things have happened in your life. And one of the big things, of course, is your publishing business. Tell us about this, because this is exciting. And as you said, the publishing industry is broken. There are so many things wrong with it. But what are you doing about it? And what are you know, your whole concept?
Well, what happened is one of my books is a New York Times bestseller, and it was a book I wrote for somebody else. And when that happens, a lot of people start coming to you and asking you to write their story. And I always said, no, I don't want to do that. And one person was incredibly insistent. He's this sports agent named Darren Prince. And he was so insistent that finally I said, well, I could ask my friend to write it, and I could edit it because I had a friend who needed work. So he said, great, as long as your stamp is on it, that's all I care about. So we have this manuscript for him. And he said, okay, now I need to publish. And I said, well, I don't know how to publish a book. And he said, I will pay you to figure it out. And so I went in there because I had played around with self-publishing, and I found it kind of amazing that there was no one really explaining or offering to do it for you. And so we figured out, I put together this team. His book came out. It was called Aiming High. It was this huge success. And when I say huge success, I am usually not talking about book sales. I'm talking about he got a six-figure spokesperson deal, he launched a speaking career, he optioned the rights, and he started getting on all these TV shows, and I was able to see what a book could do for your career if you already had a business or you wanted to establish yourself as a thought leader in a new, and he did. He wanted to become a recovery advocate. He also is in recovery from addiction. And then, business has been like crazy ever since. We've never advertised, and people just come to us. They're usually 7 and 8 figure entrepreneurs. I have a team that I put together, and they're great writers. They write for the New York Times. They write for all these places. I put my writer with the client. They spend between 3 months and a year talking. The writer writes the book in their voice. They sign off on it, and then we just put it through the paces of traditional publishing that I learned from doing 6 books with Harper. So it's, you know, developmental edit, copy edit, proofread. We do cover and we do a launch. We know how to coordinate and what we call a launch squad or an advanced reader team so that the book will debut as number one in all 10 categories. We know how to get it in 10 categories instead of two. And then we do audio books, we do premieres, we do introductions to Hollywood, we do a whole bunch of things.
Well, I think it's a very exciting idea and one that I think definitely has an important place now in the book world. For you, you know, now that you've launched the new book, well, the old book, you relaunched it with a beautiful cover, by the way. Absolutely fantastic. Isn't it wonderful?
He is such a, that's my cover designer for my company. He's just so talented.
Oh, it's beautiful. I just love to look at it. So you, now, of course, you have been able to get on to all sorts of television shows and all of this, which is why you're able now to launch this kind of publishing idea that you can expand it beyond just, you know, putting books on Amazon.
Yes. And, you know, obviously we can get in Ingram and then it goes to 44,000 other outlets. And what's so exciting about publishing right now is that it's evolving. We've learned you can go into a bookstore with your book and say, at Barnes & Noble, you know, back when Party Girl came out, if this woman named Cecily Hensley, who is the buyer for Barnes & Noble, didn't love your book was dead on arrival. Now, you can walk into a Barnes & Noble with your book and go, hey, would you order this? And they'll order it. Sometimes, not always. But I think it's really exciting that we have a lot more control. Harper used to tell me, they would get my books in Barnes & Noble for the first 2 weeks. And then it wouldn't be in the bookstore anymore. Or I'd ask about another bookstore, and they'd go, yeah, you know what, that bookstore doesn't want your book. Turns out, I didn't understand, they were pitching for hundreds of writers. If you're yourself, you're advocating for yourself. Your publisher is advocating for Glennon Doyle, Elizabeth Gilbert, whoever their biggest writer is, and you are probably not a priority unless you're them.
Well, the window of opportunity for an author, when they publish a book, they have this 2 weeks, 4 weeks maximum nowadays. That said, you, if you don't get out there and you, if you're not, noticed, even simply getting on the radio, getting on, well, certainly getting on television, it is difficult. One of the things I do here on Joy on Paper, and it always surprises authors, when I like a book, I will just go to them and I will say, well, I like your book and, you know, I'd like you to be on Joy on Paper. And they'll say, what? I haven't written anything recently. I said, well, no, I know, but I like that book you wrote 3 years ago. And they say, what? They're so shocked that anyone would ever invite them again. You know, they've sort of,
yeah.
And this is such, this is always thrills me when I do this. I love to do this, bring them back kind of interviews where people haven't, the author hasn't had a chance. And sometimes, as in your case, it's heartbreaking. You had this book and you had hopes and you had dreams and nobody talked about it for 14 years.
I know. And the thing is, what happened with me was very extreme with the publisher getting fired and all of these things. When you talk to people in traditional publishing, this happens to everybody. It's some version of it.
Oh, it happens.
It's a bit worse.
Oh, and your agents, the agents, you know, one day you're working with an agent and then, you know, off she goes to, you know, join a publisher or TV station,
right.
You know, and I've faced the same thing in Hollywood. I mean, I was so close to a deal with one of the major television stations, and the producer who was excited about it and who knew about it was fired. And then went on to something else. And the new producer, when I took the first meeting with him, he asked, because it's about Vietnam, he asked me if the Vietnam War was between World War II and the Korean War or after it. And I knew I was in trouble. I mean, I knew I was in trouble. I am not going to get this Vietnam project off the ground with this guy. Whereas the other guy, whose father had been in Vietnam, he wanted this project. We were ready to go, you know. And this happens, and so that's why, you know, life is interesting. But I'm so happy that you got to this point now that you reissued this book, and I'm sure sales are doing well. I noticed that you're. I love palindromic things. My husband liked palindromic numbers. So he'd always, on palindromic numbers, he'd always do something. So I noticed this morning that you are 717 in the humorous books.
Oh, let me look. I didn't know.
Yeah. I loved looking at that. I mean, 717 in humorous books? I thought that was pretty good.
It's pretty good. It's right now I'm looking 747.
Oh, my goodness. Well, still palindromic. So that's 30 since this morning. I looked at it at like 5:30 this morning. It was 717. So look at this. Isn't this exciting?
It is. I never get invested in the book sale because that, you know, it's such a heartbreak. So I always say, don't worry. And my clients start obsessing over the book sales. And I go, look, you know, most of us are not selling a ton of books. Have fun with this launch. Look at what this book can do for you. Party Girl is different because it's fiction. But if it's a nonfiction book, how can that help you? My last book was called Make Your Mess Your Memoir. I made $5,000 from book sales, but I made hundreds of thousands of dollars in new clients that signed with my company because they read that book.
Exactly.
So I think anything you can do, whether it's fun or financial or leaving a legacy, to make it not about the book sales, because you'll kill yourself. You'll just go crazy.
Well, I feel so much that it was just meant to be. I think it's encouraging for authors to know that this can happen, that you can. You know, come back and a favorite book might take off. And sometimes the problem is, you know, some self-published people have also, eventually gotten a book deal where a real, you know, major publisher publishes it. And that also can change their lives. So there's a lot of hope and a lot of dreams out there. And it's wonderful to meet somebody who's accomplished as much as you did.
Well, thank you so much. My message is I've had miserable book launches and fun book launches. And guess who's in control of what that's going to be? It's me. It's the author.
It's Anna David. And Anna David is somebody who is in control. And you have the, and your website is Anna David, right?
Yep, AnnaDavid.com.
So people can find you and read about your story, see all the places that you've been, all the shows. Oh my goodness, you've been on so many television shows and covered in so many different places. So it's really exciting. It's amazing. I think it's amazing. And also, they can follow you on Facebook, right?
Yes, I'm on Facebook. I'm mostly on Instagram, at Anna B. Davis. That's where I spend most of my social media time.
Okay. Well, again, Anna, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. It's been a treat to talk to you. And again, I think you're quite amazing.
Thank you so much. This was really fun.
Okay. Bye-bye now, Anna. Okay. All right. Whoa. My goodness. What a deal. After 14 years, get your book published and looking good. All right, let's go ahead and we'll have some commercials and then I'll be back with my next guest.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts. 50 years ago, Jim Lam left Vietnam after serving in the Navy, where he fixed radios, played ping pong, and swept floors. Jim wrote about his time in the service in Orange Socks and Other Colorful Tales, the story of how he survived Vietnam and kept a sense of humor. The book is available on Amazon. Just type in Orange Socks and Other Colorful Tales. You can also visit his website at www.jslstories.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest, and I'm so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Sarah Smith. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Patsy. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. Well, the name of the new book is On Location, and I love books. I love any book about filming, any books about being on location, because it's lots of fun, and I have been, and I love it. So tell us about this new book.
Yeah, absolutely. So On Location is a romantic comedy about Alia. She is a Filipino-American television producer who gets to make the series of her dreams, which is a show about Utah's national parks. And it's the career break she's been working years for, but there's one problem. Her newest crew member is the guy she had the most amazing first date with, but then he ghosted her. So she'll have to navigate clashing with him and their growing attraction, of course, as well as a host from HELL, a total diva host, to make her professional and romantic dreams come true.
Well, it's a fascinating book, and I, you know, nowadays, of course, this whole subject of ghosting. this is a new word. I don't know when it came up, and I only heard about it a few years ago. Luckily, I was long past those years. But I guess that really happens, right?
Yes, it does. Yeah, and thankfully, I'm like you in that I haven't had to deal with it because I've fortunately been in a relationship for a really long time. But yeah, unfortunately, that is a thing that people have to deal with in the dating world nowadays, which is really kind of disappointing. But I mean, I think that sort of thing will help readers relate to Ollie as a character because so many people, unfortunately, have been through the experience of being ghosted. So it's definitely a relatable experience. But not to give anything away, you find out in the book why her love interest Drew ghosted her, and I promise he has a really good reason.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. And you know, it's so funny. Oh, I'm so glad they didn't have this. I am so glad they didn't have social media when I was. Things that people go through on these things, it really is quite incredible. So tell us a little bit about yourself, because one of the things in here you talk about being a Filipino and about some food. And it's funny that not too long ago, I was with a friend, and we went to a Filipino restaurant. We have one here, not too far from us. It's called Marcel's, and they serve lumpia. So I'm not sure, did I pronounce that right?
Yeah. I think honestly, I don't know if I pronounce half of the stuff that I'm saying correctly. I just kind of go off of what my mom's family says.
Well, I think it's nice. It's refreshing. It's I like different backgrounds from people. I like to know about different things, and so that plays a part in your writing.
Yeah, it absolutely does. So I'm Filipino-American. My mom was an immigrant from the Philippines, so obviously that has informed my experience as a person. And I just think it's really important as a writer to capture an experience that's based out of your own. Especially, I think, for me, I was such an avid reader growing up, but I never saw Filipino-American characters like myself represented in the stories that I was reading. So when I started pursuing writing as a career, I definitely wanted to incorporate that into my writing, and it's been really rewarding seeing the response. People have been really positive and supportive, and readers have reached out to me and said how heartening it is to see a character who has the same background as them. Because they, just like me, have had that experience of not reading characters from their same background.
Yeah, and I think it's wonderful. It expands, first of all, it reinforces people with a Filipino background that, yeah, this is great. This is something to be proud of. And also, it informs people who aren't familiar with, the subject. And I think that's great. And that's the, important thing about being a writer, that you can bring all of these different aspects into your writing. In 20 years ago, you might not have even mentioned it in a book,
right?
Because people were saying, "Well, they're not going to be interested," but they were wrong. I can tell you, the publishers at that time were wrong, because people are interested. I know as a kid, I have a background Finnish American, and I'm from the Northern Michigan, and we talk a little bit funny, or people think we talk a little bit like this, and so we have a little bit of, so we have this sound. And when we moved to the city, well, people made fun of me, kids made fun of, my teacher called me stupid, my third grade teacher, I still don't like that woman, called me stupid, because, but, she had never heard of a Finnish American. She didn't know, you know, Finland, what they eat or do. And we did eat different. I mean, when I came to the city, it was funny. Everyone's eating, you know, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And my mother was packing completely different food. I can tell you that.
Right.
And people would look at me and say, "What is that? What is that?" You know. So, yeah, I think it's wonderful that we have this new and broadened outlook on life and certainly for writers.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's really important that, you know, people are open to other cultures different from theirs. And I think reading in books is a wonderful way to, like you said, broaden and expand a person's horizons like that.
Well, of course, it's a romance. It's there are parts that are very, very funny. You have a nice sense of humor.
Oh, thank you.
So, you know, when you started writing, were you encouraged as a child by teachers and people and parents to write? Because, as I said, my third grade teacher called me stupid. So for a long time, I thought it was stupid.
Oh, no, that's horrible, obviously. But yeah, thankfully, I grew up in a really supportive environment as far as, like, my parents and my teachers for the most part. I've always just really liked writing. I just really took to it, I guess, from a young age. And I haven't really stopped since I was a kid just making up random stories about nothing.
Well, they're about interesting people, and that's the thing that you've discovered, how to take characters and make them interesting and bring us into the world that you're writing about, which is very important. You paint the picture nicely so that we understand the people and we understand the locations. And talk a little bit about this on location. Why did you take Utah and on location? That's an interesting place to go.
Yeah, it definitely is. Funnily enough, Utah is one of my favorite places to visit because I love hiking, and southern Utah is where most of the national parks in Utah are. So I wanted this to be kind of an escape for readers. I know that traveling can still be kind of frustrating right now with the way that everything is. So I kind of just wanted to set this book in a place that would feel different from where most people were. And I also think it's kind of unique and different to set a rom-com in the middle of the desert in Utah. I don't think that that's a very common place where rom-coms and romances are set. So I just think the uniqueness of the setting and the beauty of the setting really drew me to Utah as where I should set on location.
Well, and it will draw the reader in, I tell you. It is a wonderful place, and you make it sound even better. for people who are lucky enough to have RVs, you know, it is a go-to destination. And just being on location. Now, you've been on location for film shoots yourself?
I haven't actually, but I have a couple of friends who work in actually, like, outdoor television and film and TV. So I called them and emailed back and forth with them, asking them a million questions about what it's like to work with or to work on a set and the kind of problems and challenges that they face, so I could incorporate their experiences into on locations just to make it sound more authentic and realistic.
Well, you did a good job because it is fun to be on location. And you never know, they might pick this up and make a film of it, and then you could be on location. And
I would love that.
And you can actually then experience what it is to be on location, because boy, oh boy, in a world where things can go wrong, there is no place in the world that things can go more wrong than when you are on location. And of course, it also does make that sort of intimacy, you know, you're very close to the people that you're working with when you're on location. Sometimes too close, but you certainly tell the story nicely.
Oh, thank you for saying that. Yeah, and you know, fingers crossed, maybe someday I will find myself on location.
Well, you're doing so very, very well. All of your books are well, first of all, the covers of the some of your books are just, this one is fantastic, and I like Simmer Down, the food truck one, because I love food truck wars. I love that when they had that television show on. I really enjoyed that because I've sort of always wanted to do a Finnish food truck, and I would win because the food is so good. I've never had quite the energy or the financial resources to actually do it. But yeah, we could be competing in food trucks. You with a Filipino, me with a Finnish. You know, wouldn't that be nice competition?
Oh, I would love that. Yeah. Anytime you want to throw down or, you know, let's do it. I'm here.
Wouldn't that be great? It would be fun. It would be fun. Well, you know, that's the wonderful thing about being a writer. You can explore all of these different things that you want to do. You know, even if you've never owned a food truck, you can write about it.
Yeah, honestly, that's part of the appeal of, like you said, being a writer. Honestly, the only thing that limits you is your imagination. And as long as you're willing to research and, you know, watch YouTube videos, read books, talk to people, you can make any story happen, honestly. It's a really fun part of the writing process, I think.
Well, I thought, I like the title also, Simmer Down. So when people finish On Location, they can go back to that book, which also has a beautiful cover. And then exactly the right title for people who are in food trucks, and they do sort of steam a lot. As you know, yeah. Why are you in this location? Why, this is my location. You're 2 feet into my location. Yeah, Simmer Down was. I thought that was such a perfect title for that book.
Oh, I'm so glad. Yeah, I was. I'm really lucky. I'm horrible at titles, so my editor helps come up with Simmer Down, and it's like you said, it's a really perfect way to capture the essence of that book, which is, you know, two people who run food trucks in Maui, and they're vying for the same parking spot on this really beautiful beach, and it's just, like you said, a throwdown.
it is. It's so funny because I have seen them actually fight over 1 foot of space that their truck is too close, you know. simmer down. simmer down, calm down, and get Sarah Smith's book. Go to the beach and relax. So, it's just really exciting. When my listeners are always interested, how did you get your first book sold? What's that story behind that first book?
Yeah, so I actually got it through Twitter, of all places. There's an event every Valentine's Day called Kiss Pitch, and if you have written like a romance manuscript, you pitch your manuscript on Twitter, and that's actually how I got my agent. And then when I signed with her, we did revisions on that book, and then a few months later, that's when I got my publishing deal with Berkeley Penguin Random House.
Wow. So Twitter can lead to some really great stuff.
Yeah, it can, honestly, sometimes, yeah.
So explain that process. I think some people don't know. I've, of course, seen it, but what exactly, how do you do this pitch? What did you say? I mean, what did you say that was, I mean, you must have said something really great.
I mean, I like to think so, but so for Kiss Pitch, what you do is you essentially pitch the concept of your romance book in a tweet. So for me, I was pitching my very first book that I ever published, Faker, which was an enemies to lovers office romance. So I really, I don't remember the exact tweet that got me my agent, but I remember highlighting the tension of the relationship, really highlighting the friends to lovers, or sorry, the enemies to lovers aspect of that book, because enemies to lovers is such a popular trope in romance. Readers really love it. I really love it as a reader and a writer. It's really fun to write and read. So I just remember doing that, and that, I think, helped hook people to my tweet, my pitch for that book.
Well, Hollywood has known about this enemies to lovers business for years, and have run with it. And you're right, people love it. But this is something that people, you know, authors are always looking for a way to find an agent, and it's not easy. And it looks like you must have written. We have to go back and analyze what in the world you said that was so great. I do know one woman who got a publishing deal. She got an agent because she sent actually a real you know, what I, it's, you can't even talk about it anymore. A letterhead, letter to an agent. And she wrote one word on it. And the agent called her and she had a deal that day. But this doesn't happen very often. And it took me years of making friends with this. I actually made friends with this woman more or less because I wanted to know what the heck word she wrote. I mean, she was a guest on the program, and she said that to me, and I said, one word. Well, you know, so she wouldn't tell me, of course. She didn't know me from the man in the moon. You know, she was on my program. And then I thought, well, you know, I've got to find out this. So I started whining and dining her back in the days when we could wine and dine people until finally she relented, and she told me the one word, and I thought, oh, that's genius.
Oh, really?
I would never have thought of that in a million years. And she's now a New York Times bestselling author. So,
oh, wow.
You know, you never know what will do it. And a Twitter, well, you know, gives, I think, more respect to Twitter world. Because sometimes people hate Twitter world.
But
it did great for you. And you're doing so very, very well. And I think that it's just fun. It's always fun when I get an author on who... the enthusiasm, I think, comes through into the book. And that certainly is the case with you with On Location. And you have a name that's simple, Sarah Smith. Not so, but there are a lot of them out there. So how do people find you? What?
Yeah. So you can find me. I'm on Twitter and Instagram. I am at author Sarah S.
Sarah, I knew it was something complicated. Author Sarah S. Author Sarah S. Because, and if you type On Location, I think you'll also have, that will sort of send you to Sarah, because you have a nice web page and you have all your nice covers there. I like that. It looks really good. And again, Sarah, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. You have been a joy. And I know that you're going to come out with another book. So you'll be back, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. This was such a pleasure.
Okay. Bye-bye now, Sarah.
Bye.
Bye. Okay. Her release date was on Tuesday, and I was so happy that she could come on. It's really exciting always when I have people on. I wanted her to be on Pub Day, but I already was fully booked, so I'm glad that we got her today. And the name of the book is On Location. Whoa. People, if you have an RV, head out to Utah. That's a nice place. You don't have to stay in a hotel. I think that's a wonderful thing about having an RV. And I've been reading a lot about RVs lately because Rita Moreau, who does our book buzzes, has a series about set in RVs. And so I want to suggest that you check out RitaMoreau.com. And she has a new book coming out soon. And her most recent book is Murder on Honky Tonk Row. And it is about somebody who is traveling in an RV. And, well, she thought she was going to be traveling alone. And then next thing she knows, there's somebody sitting there in the seat next to her. And, whoa, it is a little bit of a ghost. Well, not a little bit of a ghost, a big ghost, Irma, and a very fascinating character. And so those are Rita Moreau's books, and you can check out her website, RitaMoreau.com. Great books, and she's got a new book coming out, Murder in the Badlands. So it's always exciting when I know authors, and I know them when they're writing, and they talk to me every once in a while. You know, lift their head up away from the typewriter, and they say, I'm writing, it's coming along. And Rita's book, Murder in the Badlands, is coming along soon, and we will let you know about it, because it is exciting when writers are really, really, you know, turning out a lot of interesting things. And I wanted to mention about Anna David. Now, she mentioned there that she got her rights back, and it was difficult for her. And, you know, this, and it's really, I'm telling you right now, she is very lucky and very fortunate that she did not try to go ahead and publish without having it cleared, because you do not want to do that. Bill Larson is going to be on the program next week, and we're going to talk about intellectual property. If you have any questions about intellectual property, your rights, because remember, it is property, it is of value. You should just contact Bill Larson at Larson & Larson. Just go to the website, type in Larson & Larson, and tell him what you're doing and what you're interested in learning about, and he will be happy to help you walk through any, first of all, copyright, because you have to have that right, and then you have to know before you sign any documents, before you send out anything, do not send your manuscript out on the internet. Please don't do that. In Anna David's case, if she had not, I can tell you right now, if she had not had the release from the publisher, and then she went ahead and released the book on her own and gotten a movie deal, that publisher would have been on her so fast, her head would have been spinning. And they would have had the rights to anything that she has going. So you do not ever want to try that. You cannot go, cannot play chicken with major publishers. You can't, like, go round about them, because eventually their tentacles will reach in and grab you and choke you to death. So I can tell you from personal experience, you need a lawyer. And it's always best to have the lawyer, intellectual property lawyer, right from the get-go, right when you start, before you actually need the lawyer, because sometimes by the time you need the lawyer, it's too late because you messed up. You sent your script to the wrong person, or you've given the wrong person the right to go ahead and just, my goodness, get an option on your film. And the next thing you know, they've got more rights than you have. So please, please be careful. And next week we will have Bill Larson from Larson & Larson here to talk about it. Because, listen, everybody, remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, to hear them spoken in audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry and her Witch City Mysteries. But you don't want to get in trouble, so you need a lawyer. And never, ever, ever, ever give anybody rights, and never accept anything over the internet. Never say, oh yeah, go ahead, I'm so happy that you're going to look at it. Don't do that. Please don't do that. I'm begging you, because I know from experience, you will be sorry. You don't want a lawsuit. Meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. I am so grateful for everything he does for me, and he's going to salute me. I know he's going to salute me. He's not saluting me. Maybe I've been demoted. Anyway, I have to hope. Okay, I'm going to salute him, because I should have been a general, and I would have been a great general. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend, everybody, and start writing. My goodness, November's coming up. NaNoWriMo. My goodness, you're going to write a book in a month in November. Make yourself a promise that you're going to do it this year. I did it thanks to my goddaughter, Kanisha. And oh, she has the most beautiful new baby. I am so, so thrilled. And I will talk about it more next week. Bye-bye now.